This is Will's Band of the Week for November 13th, 2017. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Hey, Will.
Hey, so let's see. I think when we talked recently, when we texted, you were snowed in your car.
Yeah, kinda.
So what the hell was that all about?
Well, I had last week taken my car in for an oil change and some brake work, and the guy's like, "You need some new tires before it snows." I was like, "Okay, well, fine, I'll do that."
Yeah.
A couple days later, I drive up north, about an hour north of Green Bay, and overnight it snowed. Mm-hmm. And I was at my dad's cottage at the bottom of this. It's a pretty steep driveway and steep hill, but usually it's not a problem.
Uh-huh.
But I could not get up there at all. I was completely stuck. And longtime listeners will know that Will is getting a phone call from an unidentified.
It says call from wireless caller.
Yeah.
Hmm. Not answering that one. What would the 503 area code be?
503, I don't know.
Yeah, oh well.
Nobody we know.
Nah.
Maybe it's a listener calling to tell me to
speed
up my story a little bit. Yeah, so I could not get up the hill. I mean, it wasn't like there was a half a foot of snow. It was just like a little bit.
Doesn't take much if it's coated with a slippery thing, you know.
And bad tires.
Yeah.
Anyway, my dad's got a pickup truck, and he just put it in this gear called low tow, and, you know, just dragged me up with a rope. It was like no slipping at all. He had no problem. So
then did you get back on the same tires?
Yeah, it was a little bit, a little treacherous because there was, you know, accidents all over the place.
Oh, wow. And then you're on like bald tires.
Yeah. So I'm always a pretty cautious driver in the snow and ice.
Yeah.
So that helped me out, helped keep me between the ditches all the way back.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Then I got back in time to watch that Badger game. Were you at that game?
Yeah, I was at the game. Yeah.
Man, they gave up 66 yards of total offense.
Yeah.
Did you realize that?
It was a very impressive defensive performance. Yeah, that was a good game. And then the Packers won today. So it's all like everything is right in the world because our football team's won. Right.
It makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
I just feel, especially after that Packers win today.
Yeah.
That felt better than an average win like any of the past however many years, 20 years, like just a regular season win.
Yeah, because you were wondering.
This one felt better than that.
Because you're wondering, could they actually win a game?
Yeah.
Which I thought they couldn't. So, yeah.
They're much better than it looked they'd be.
When expectations are low and then they win, it makes it more satisfying.
Well, it's going to make them stronger in the long run, too. Right. You can't just sit back and expect one guy to bail you out of all your problems.
Yeah, that's true.
So when he comes back, they're all going to be a lot more, be a lot more of a team.
Yeah, we hope so.
Yep.
All right. Anyway. Well, we have excitement this week. Due to scheduling, we couldn't get Craig on at the same time as you, but we have recorded a segment with Craig.
Nice.
So let's play that now, and then we'll be back with our regularly scheduled podcast. Okay, we're here with Craig for a special segment. And
a few minutes only.
I know you've got some live reports, but should we go into sort of the general gentleman from Ipswich visits Brooklyn kind of thing?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I'm an alien, a legal alien.
So did,
an Englishman in New York.
Right, so Trump let you in the country. That was nice.
That was my first concern, but straight through there.
Yeah.
I think the relationship between the UK and the US hasn't degenerated quite to that. We've had Theresa May, our Prime Minister, telling him off a couple of times. But
they still let you in. That's good.
Yeah. Tourism is still an industry which they're respecting in New York. So you say, I'm here for a week and I'm going to spend some money, they'll let you in.
Yeah, okay. And plus, you probably let them know that you were on assignment for the Will's Band of the Week podcast. And that's
You say that, the red carpet tends to come out. And a group of men with trumpets came out in tabards, and really the big fanfare.
That's good. That's the way it should be.
Flags were waving.
Yeah, you're greeted as a, you know, the celebrity that you deserve to be treated as, right?
Yeah, like when a diplomat comes, a little right. bit more grand reception than that, if you could imagine. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty nice.
Wow, that's cool. I'm sorry that I was not able to be there. I was in the humble Midwest. Yeah. So you've been to New York City before, right?
Yes, a few times. Which is kind of, yeah, but like the fifth time now or something.
You've been there more than I have. I've been there. I think I've been there either three or four times. So you've out New Yorked me. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, when I get something in my head, I just tend to keep doing it to the exclusion of other things. Yeah, I just went there 3 years in a row when I first went because I liked it so much. It's a cool city, but you know, I find it so tough and gritty, even more now than I did when I first went. It just seems, I don't know, people there, you must have to be so tough to live there. This the dirt and the filth, and this is so noisy and busy. Walking down 8th Avenue, for example, on a Wednesday evening last week, it's just, the sidewalks are packed with people, both sides, traffic everywhere, bright neon lights. That's New York, so you can take it or leave it.
Yeah, and I've found, though, that there is a lot of difference depending on what neighborhood you're in. Although I guess one thing that's consistent is it's going to be pretty crowded just about everywhere.
Well, you say that, but this time I stayed in Montrose Avenue in Brooklyn, which is about four stops. You come on the L train over from Manhattan under the East River. Then it's Bedford Avenue in Williamsburg, which is the real hipster area first. And then four more stops on is Montrose Avenue where I stayed. Mm-hmm. You come out of the subway, the sidewalks are clear. Just ordinary people going about their business, a couple of hipsters piling out of bars, but nothing compared to Manhattan where you can't, you just bump into people on the sidewalks.
So you're far away enough from the craziness that didn't quite have that same feel. Yeah,
it was quite nice. You could go into Manhattan and at the end of the day I'd go back, come up, and it's almost like being in just a normal city rather than the chaos.
Did you see, like, did every person look like either a Pitchfork reviewer or somebody who moved to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom?
I don't know. No, not really. I don't think so. Williamsburg is where it all started, sort of kicked off, this Brooklyn thing. But if you go there now, you know, there's an ice store, there's Whole Foods, there's people pushing, what do you call them? Strollers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With their children. You know, it's very safe and nice there now. Young families. You know, it's just not particularly hip in Williamsburg. And then you go out east into Brooklyn and there's an area called Bushwick, which is where the kind of the art people and people, artists in their loft and the musicians have kind of gravitated towards, I believe. So maybe that's where all the hip people are.
But. Yeah, it's interesting because as the neighborhoods get developed, then the artist community has to move because they always have to move to where it's cheaper rent. So
yes.
It's going to keep getting pushed farther and farther out, I suppose.
Yeah, I saw one. We were looking at the real estate office as we walked down the street there in Williamsburg, so in that kind of gentrified area. And a two-bedroom apartment was $5,400 a month.
Oh, God.
Which is just ridiculous.
Oh,
I think I worked out if you had a couple, so a male and female couple, both earning $100,000,
right,
then you could just about afford that. But,
boy.
I mean, okay, that's pretty wealthy. I mean, you must be into the upper 25% of people if you're both earning that kind of salary. It's, you know, it's a decent salary.
Two people making $100,000 in the U.S., you'd be easily in the top 10%, like nationwide.
Yeah,
so. You know, maybe the top 5%.
You're basically so, rich.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and I'm sure that salaries are higher, but I mean, when you look at how many people in New York City have to be like in service industries and, you know, not to mention the arts, you know, I don't know how, like, those people just have to live like a lot longer commute away,
yeah.
I guess. Like the people who we know who live in Brooklyn, they live in this neighborhood called Sunset Park, which is mm-hmm. sort of South Brooklyn, I guess. And it's pretty reasonably nice. It's kind of crowded, but it's sort of a family neighborhood. It's kind of, there's a Chinatown. The Brooklyn Chinatown is down there. But it's just barely, barely doable for them. Like, they had to find an apartment that's in some district that's got some sort of a rent control going on, and, you know, government, whatever, limits on how much they can charge for rent, and you know, so they can just barely afford to live there. So
it's kind of
on edge. Yeah. So all right, now that we've gone through the entire summary of what New York City is,
of the five boroughs, yeah, that's done.
Right. So now probably we should go to the primary purpose. Well, you can be on the podcast for any reason you want, but we're going to focus on this. The only problem is I don't think Brooklyn can quite rock like that jingle does, but they try.
Yeah.
So when you were there, you scouted out the place, right? You scoured the entire New York City area for...
I did a lot of due diligence before I went over. In the weeks leading up to my trip, I really scoured the listings.
I mean,
the best shows for me to see while I'm there.
You found a listing in Denver before I found it. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Like, I'm going to go out of town a couple times in the next couple months. I'm going to ask you how to find bands. It's like,
see what I can pull up.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Kansas City in a week and a half, and then I'm going to be in New Orleans the week before Christmas. So you're gonna scout this. I'm going to let you scout it out for me. You'll find some band playing there that I can't find.
Well, New Orleans, that won't be difficult. You just got to walk down the street and there'll be a little bar.
Right.
With some good local music happening or something.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
We'll have a look.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get on to these reports.
Right.
So first of all, I've got three... Yeah, I'll do them in chronological order. So first, last Friday, I met with David Zuger, my co-correspondent and head of the New York Bureau.
Yeah.
We met at a hipster hangout called Berry Park in Williamsburg.
Hey, I must interrupt this. I just got a message that David, he responded to my email. So let's see if we can get a hold of him. Hold on here.
Oh, great.
Okay, we almost got David, but I guess not. Not quite. So
I believe David and I, where we left off there, I was just meeting David at Berry Park, which is a bar there in Williamsburg. And I wanted to have a nice American beer. That's why I thought I'd start the evening, but this place only had German beer. So I guess that's what the hipsters like.
Oh.
So I had a nice massive glass of German wheat beer. Then David and I, it was very good to meet David, the two correspondents, and we thought we had a little plan, prepared our notes in advance, then had a nice walk through the streets of Williamsburg down to the venue, which was the weather was very nice for the time of year. This was about the 4th of November, and it had been 20 centigrade that day, which I think is about 75 Fahrenheit or something, maybe 70. It was very pleasant for the time of year.
That's pretty nice, yeah.
Yeah. Walked down, and the venue was Rough Trade New York. Rough Trade being the British record label and music store.
Right,
so
yes.
That's their outpost in Brooklyn.
I've seen that room, but there was nobody playing in there when I was in there.
Nice space. You walk in, and they've got the racks. Sometimes when you have a gig in a record store, you're all crammed with your back like on the records. And you think, oh, what am I leaning on here amongst the A section or something? But you go through, and then you walk in. There's restrooms, a bar, merchandise table, and then you go through some curtains into a nice large room. So very nice space. And we were there to see Rural Alberta Advantage, which is a band that David recommended. They're from, well, I should say opening up was their fellow Canadians, Yukon Blonde. And I wondered if they were from the northwest of Canada. So that's where Yukon is, I believe. And
yeah.
I wondered if Yukon Blonde is meant to be like a pun on like white on blonde and blonde on blonde. By Texas and Bob Dylan, respectively. Oh, well, no, I got the wrong order, but David wasn't really having any of that nonsense. He didn't know if Yukon Blonde was a pun or not.
Yeah.
But I haven't really got much more to say about them, apart from the fact that they weren't that great. Really. And then Rural Alberta Advantage. Well, where do I begin? They're from Alberta, which is probably a pretty rural place, I imagine. I don't know if it has any cities of any note, because certainly Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, the larger cities, are not there. Very kind of genial band. There's a guitarist on acoustic guitar, drummer, pretty good drummer, and then a woman on keyboard and backing vocals. And David and I compared notes afterwards, and we pretty much agreed. So I'm just going to steal his analysis now and pretend this was mine. He said the first 8 to 10 songs were absolutely brilliant. And I remember thinking as the set was going through, I thought, okay, track, the first thing they played, like 9 or 10 out of 10, superb. Which maybe we should have a sample of that now. Yes, let's do that, and then I'll carry on. So we've got a little bit to play, haven't we? Which is the first track from their new album.
Right, here we go.
There's a voice screaming in the haze. I let him in to the cold. No lies lit in this town, you never know. While the fire sears our little faith, I'll get you all the way home. No lies lit in this town, you never, never wanna go. Oh, I'm living in the table lights, I guess I've drawn to know.
That's the rural Alberta advantage.
They I don't know how you feel about that, Will, but I think that's a pretty good song. I really like it.
They had an album quite a few years ago now. It's got to be like 6 or 7 years ago that I listened to and I remember liking. And then I just lost track of them. I don't know if they've had anything in between or not. But yeah, it has a little bit of a, you know, you'd call it the Americana sound, right? Except it's a Canadia sound or something like that. I don't know if there's a word
yeah.
for that. Rural Canada.
I think that's something which just appeals to me. Maybe kind of REM would really be, as far as I know, the band that kind of invented that kind of sound in
Although,
the early 80s. I don't know if you know any better than me. And the Hidden Cameras is a mod current band who Rural Alberta Advantage really reminded me of. And I just like those two bands. Just the sound. Maybe Americana is something I really like.
So they sustained the momentum for 8 to 10 songs?
8 or 10 tracks. They're all brilliant. You know, I was thinking, this is one of the live shows of the year. This is fantastic. Friday night in Brooklyn, you know. But then the next 8 and 10 songs were just exactly the same. I don't like people who criticize a live band by saying, oh, they all sound the same. Because most often that's not the case. It's just you in your brain. You haven't been able to digest it. But
yep.
Literally with this band, every song sounded the same. So all 3-minute slices of Canadiana, kind of pounding drums, powerful acoustic-driven pop songs, really nice. When you've heard 20 of them, it just kind of gets a little bit tired, a bit stale.
So half of a really good show, then.
I still think I would put it in my favorite shows of the year, but because the start was so good.
I wonder if you had...
I just think they could have varied things, changed it up a little bit somehow.
Sometimes in that situation, if you knew the songs, then you'd be able to distinguish them more and it wouldn't feel the same, maybe? I wonder about that.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
Well, that's cool. So
a strong recommendation. If you like the sound of that little snippet we played, if you like Hidden Cameras or Americana stuff, then do check them out. They're a good live band.
What kind of a crowd did they have?
It wasn't full there. I would say maybe 150 people. A few people came in just before they came on. You know, fashionably late. You don't want to arrive too much.
Sure, of course. You're in Brooklyn, man. Can't be on time. But as I remember, there's a legitimate stage, right? It's like, it's not like you picture, well, you already kind of touched on this, but it's not like you picture at a record store where you're like off in the corner or something. They have a like actual, it looks like a live venue, right?
Yes, it really is. Like a proper venue. Yeah. A nice, what I would say, the ideal kind of size for me going to a live show. Maybe. Probably capacity would be 250, 300, something like that, I'm estimating.
Do they have beer there?
They do, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I managed to get an American beer there, something from Brooklyn Brewery, which is about 2 blocks from there.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good.
I think that's... I've had some beer from Brooklyn Brewery, and I thought it was good. So
one of my favorites.
We'll endorse that. Sure, why not? All right.
Let's move on, because I know you're going to have some recorded music with Barrett later, so we've got to press on through this and get me off of here so you have time to,
right,
to chat with Barrett.
We got to get you in and out of here. Right.
Yeah.
So
the very next day, I went to see, this was a recommendation from yourself, Will, another Canadian band from Montreal, which is Ought,
right.
As in you ought to see them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're playing at the Silent Barn in Brooklyn, which was about 15 minutes walk from where I was staying, so that's pretty convenient. So I just walked out of the apartment, got there about 5 to 8, and the doors opened at 8, so I walked in. I was quite excited to see Ought, and they kind of feel like the band I would want to like. I'm kind of inclined to like them, but something really didn't go right with me on this particular evening.
Hmm, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's a cool venue, Silent Barn. One of those kind of DIY places where there's a little bar selling cans of beer, you know, one restroom for the whole crowd, kind of run-downy sort of place, but kind of decorated in a rough-and-ready kind of sort of style. Nice little venue. So that was quite auspicious for a good evening, but I met this guy there who kind of pissed me off a bit. Huh. It's quite unusual for me. I like to meet new people, but he was just a bit of an idiot.
And it cast a negative spell on your experience, huh?
Yeah. So opening up, there was a band called Boys Online, and after that, Trace Mountains. Boys Online, I wouldn't bother to check out again. Mm-hmm. And Trace Mountains had maybe one good song. But the good thing was, with both of them, they both played five songs, which is good.
Yeah.
2 or 3 minutes a song, five songs. Gives you a sample, and if you want to know more, you go and see them again. I think that's a good model for the support band.
Yeah. Especially if it's assumed that nobody in the crowd has heard their music, you know, and it's just like you're there for a sampling. That's a nice amount of time, really.
Yeah, I think so. Make a virtue of it. And so let's play a little snippet of Ore, and then I've maybe got a couple more comments. We've got a bit of a track to play. This is from their previous album. The new one's out early 2018, I think.
Right. This one is from the last one, Sun Coming Down. It's called Beautiful Blue Sky. That's odd.
That is Ort. I think they played that maybe last or certainly towards the end of the set. And Will, what let's do a Barrett here. What band does that remind you of?
Oh God, I'm not. All I can think of is when I saw them play that, how engrossed I was, and I just sat there just like in a trance because I was just, I was so into it. And that song is over 7 minutes long, and it just kind of builds. And I'm sorry you weren't able to get as engrossed as I got, but
I think I'd give them another try. Something grated with me on that particular evening, but they reminded me strongly of the Talking Heads.
Oh, that's interesting.
Sound.
You know what's funny?
So much like them.
I can sort of see that, and it's funny. We've had Talking Heads conversations in our family because they're the band that I'm supposed to like, but I could just never get into. And I'm not really sure why, but there's just something that I just can't get into the Talking Heads. My wife thinks David Byrne is awesome, and I think Grant kind of likes him, and I don't know. I couldn't get into him. But that's he does have the half-talking vocal delivery thing going on.
Sure. And I think it's kind of the weird time signatures as well reminded me. And the sparseness. of the arrangements a little bit. Something about it and the way he repeats those lines about ordinary, mundane stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I don't know. Sorry to give a bit of a negative review on that one, but I think the circumstances on the night didn't exactly go well for me, and I tried them again. If you like the Talking Heads, I would certainly check them out.
All right. So you've got one more.
Yeah, let's get through this quickly. Then I flew home the next day to London, and then the following day after that, someone from New York had come over with me, very kindly of her. This was Emily Sprague, a florist.
Yes.
She didn't actually fly with me, but like she was tweeting, I'm at JFK now, and I'd landed that day or something. So she followed the day after me.
She was not quite on the flight with you.
That would have been so fun. Although probably wouldn't have spoken to her because I'm very shy, and I'm sure she is. So, but anyway, it would have been in a dream world.
It would be a little awkward. Isn't it kind of weird when you have I think that we aren't the kind of people that idolize, people and freak out about that or whatever. But it's still when you see them in a different context, when I saw Florist at the Memorial Union, I was just walking around beforehand and she was just sitting at a table, all by herself, holding her guitar. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's weird. That's Emily Sprague just sitting there. I was I'm not going to walk up to her and she would be thinking why is this weird old man walking up to me? Right. So I wouldn't do that. But it's just different, isn't it?
I wonder what some people have something wrong in their brain where they think they should harass these people. Because if you think about it, what's the best thing that could possibly happen from approaching her in that situation? You'd say, oh, hi. And she'd say, hi. I quite like your band. And I'm here tonight to see you play. Well, yeah, I could have figured that.
Right. Exactly.
Then what you'd say?
I know.
Okay. and off you go. So
I know.
Nothing really. Even if you got on amazingly well for 5 minutes. Yeah. You're living in Madison. She's, you're not going to be friends or anything. So it's just a bit weird.
Right, exactly. Or you could say, I do this podcast on the internet that not that many people listen to. She'd be like, why should I care?
We've talked about that a couple of times.
Yeah. Right. So
this was, I remember your review. You said it was kind of a Saturday night, wasn't it? And they came on ridiculously late at midnight or something. And it was very quiet, which Forest are.
Right.
But this was probably a much better setting for her because she came on her own, a solo, and it was a very small room, and you go down some stairs, and Amanda was there with me. And before Emily came down the stairs to play, Amanda sat down on the floor. I remember you mentioned that when you saw her play, she made everyone sit down. And I said, oh, no, what are you doing? Don't sit down. Then everyone sat down around us.
She knew the protocol,
came down the stairs with her guitar, and she smiled when she saw everyone sitting. As if, yes, this is what you should be doing. And then there was about 30 people seated there, cross-legged. Uh-huh. And she sat, had a chair sitting on the stage. Yeah, and just played maybe 6 or 7 of the songs from a couple their two albums, and solo acoustic with a couple of them had a little drum machine thing where you, I don't know what you call it, where you touch it with your foot and it plays a little acoustic along with you. So, yeah, it was cool.
So
very nice.
So totally minimalist, and it worked.
Yeah, I think it much better setting for her, that kind of music. I don't know how they'll go down in a larger venue for, say, 250 or 300 people where people are standing around, had a few beers, Saturday night. Headline show. It's not the kind of music, really.
Right. Yeah. Well, you picked a song to play a little snippet of.
Oh, yeah, she played this one. Let's have a little listen. This is quite interesting.
2 out of 10 for the day I get another CT scan. 1 cup of coffee and the leftover slice of pizza from last night. Wouldn't this be easier if I never left my home? Wouldn't this be easier if I stayed in the mountains alone? A mom and a dad who always do their best, but even they couldn't stop me from near death. You know what? I'm glad. I'm glad I broke my neck. It stopped me from thinking about the things that make me sad. Wouldn't this be easier? No, wait, it never would. Wouldn't this be better? No, wait, it never could.
Yes, that's To Atavan by Florist. And she's a, I better say, she's such a sweet person, and she was just absolutely kind of in awe of, it's her first ever live show in Europe, never mind in London, so she's really excited to be there, and took her a moment to compose herself at the start. And she's kind of, I think she's a very optimistic songwriter, and yet she deals with these subjects. A lot of her earlier songs about when she had this bike accident in New York and almost died and broke so many bones in her body and stuff. And I think that's what that's about as well, that song.
Yeah,
and,
that
she
must
covers subjects like death and goodness gracious.
Right. That must have been the demo or home recording or whatever before that previous album, The Birds Outside Sang, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the earlier EP or mini album.
Right, yeah.
So she played one song from there and then a handful from the first album and then a handful from the new one. Yeah, it's very, very nice. Yeah.
Okay, so the theme for your live report, if we, now we're going to take like the big picture.
Yes, we should summarize
the
now, big, yeah.
The lesson to be learned is, so two of these artists were bands that I saw like within a month of, or a couple months of when you saw them, and our experiences are completely different, you know, and part of it is, part of it is how we reacted to them, and part of it is just sort of the setting. So it is interesting, isn't it? Because bands can probably tour all over the place, and every show can be a little bit different depending on the venue and the time of day and just the whole like vibe of the whole thing. It's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's one reason I like to try and, if it's a band I, you know, I'm kind of into, I try and see them twice on the same tour, maybe back-to-back days or maybe a few days apart, just because for the reasons you described. Gives you a different perspective, and one might be good if the other one isn't so good.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. All right.
Well, yeah, very good to be here doing those reviews, and I'll hand over to the recorded segment. Recorded music.
All right. Thanks for being with us near midnight your time.
Yeah, and, my pleasure.
We'll now turn back to our regularly scheduled podcast. So you can say goodnight to the listeners now.
Good night to the listeners now.
All right. Thanks to Craig.
Wow.
That was good. You didn't even hear it.
Nice job, Craig. No, yeah. I thought we were going to pretend that we were just listening to Craig.
Oh, that's right. Well, I did, but Barrett, actually, he just heard 3 seconds of silence.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's behind the scenes.
I'm going to go by things I've heard Craig say before and stick my neck out and say that Craig did a fine job.
Yeah, he did an excellent job. He's still solidly a correspondent, not even on probation or anything. Just completely in good standing.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So basically, to summarize, Craig has been basically traveling the world on behalf of the podcast to scout out live performances.
Mm-hmm.
So great. That was awesome. So Barrett almost had a live report, but then in pre-production, we determined that there's that cliche that if you're not going to say anything good, then just don't say anything, right? So we're just going to not talk about it.
Right.
Right? And we're not going to disclose what live performance Barrett saw. It just erase it from, you know, it never happened, right?
Never happened.
Nope. But we do have some fun this week, right?
Yeah, but this is a fun, I can't believe we've not ever thought of this one before.
We're kind of like U2 now. We own all of music. We can,
that's right.
You know, when we decide we are going to cover a band, that's it. It's the definitive statement about the band.
Right.
So, well, they know probably from the title of the podcast that we're going to talk about The Clash. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about the Sex Pistols and the Ramones. Well, the Sex Pistols mainly, but the Ramones came up. And The Clash is of that same era.
Yeah.
Little bit different stylistically, but, mm-hmm. you know, all coming up around at the same time. It was kind of a music boom in a way, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know they played their first gig opening up for the Sex Pistols?
I may have heard that at some point.
It was on July 4th, 1976.
So you might have just completely made that up, and I'm going to be gullible and believe it. So,
well, yeah,
because you could just like start laughing right now and say, I knew I could get you on that one.
Yeah,
yeah.
But no, I guess I'm serious. And oddly enough, that's a day that we can remember.
July 4th, 1976,
Bicentennial Day.
That was the Bicentennial.
You don't remember
day.
That?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, the
build up the and stuff.
Bicentennial thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 150 years. I was thinking in math in my head. That must be 150, right? No, wait, no. Bicentennial. That's
yeah.
That would be 200 years.
200 years. That's right.
150 seems more apt for some reason.
Well, Wisconsin had their. You call that a sesquicentennial? Remember when?
That's 150.
Wisconsin had their sesquicentennial. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a clumsy word.
Yeah. What are we going to call 250? Bicentennial.
It's a quarter of a millennium, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be like the
quartennial.
Yeah, something like that. All right. Well, anyway. Okay, so The Clash. Yeah, so here's the thing. We should just start playing music because we'll have plenty of comments as we go, right? So we only had one song in common because you must have known that I was going to pick more of the hits, and so you went for more deep cuts, which is cool. So that's good. So we only have one in common, and instead of our usual five, we did six. So my number six is... I Fought the Law. I think that this is a cover of a song that was written in the 50s and then popularized by some other guy. I forgot his name, like in the early 60s. So it's an old-fashioned song, but it seems like a perfect cover for them to do. I think it just fits their style really well.
Totally.
And one little trivia thing about it, I was looking just to see all the versions of it. And so on Apple Music, I did a search just for the song title. And yeah, I got all these versions of it. You know what was the just absolute worst? I never knew this existed. There's a Green Day cover of I Fought the Law.
Yeah.
And what's really bad about it, I mean, there have been times like I loved American Idiot, you know, and, you know, some of the Green Day stuff. But they did it in just a terrible, exact style of the Clash cover. So it was like they were doing a cover of a cover. You know, it's not even their original version of the song. It even has like the fade in of the drums, like the Clash version has.
Yeah.
And then it has the bratty Billy Joe Armstrong thing that just like, get out of here. So here's the better one, The Clash, I Fought the Law. That's a great job of a cover, I think.
Great, great, great song.
And that instrumental part is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's
just
like
all the guitar work in there is perfect.
Yeah, and the drumming is great, and it's rock and roll.
Yep.
The Clash.
They took that song and kind of like made it their own, right?
Totally. And that's a sign of a good cover, right? You take your own, you put some of your input on it. You don't just try to repeat the exact thing of the original recording.
Right.
Right. All right. Let's go to your number six song by The Clash. This one's named after a basketball team, apparently.
Well, you would think so.
But I was joking. Probably not.
He was it's called Washington Bullets. And people later asked him, like, you know, obviously it's not about basketball. It's about all kinds of things. Nicaragua and the Bay of Pigs, and very political song. And not only, of course, he's going to say, well, yeah, it's not about that. But he wasn't even aware that there was a team at that time called the Washington Bullets. Now they're the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, because you can't name your team after bullets, because that's not cool. I mean, they did, but they changed it.
Yeah. So what I like about this song is, it's on an album called Sandinista, and we can, throughout the podcast, maybe talk a little bit about how we feel about that album. But they kind of go for, you know, I mean, they started off being a punk band, just a plain punk band. And by this time, their fourth album had really, really gotten away from that. So this is a good demonstration of that, and use some interesting instrumentation. They've got like a marimba is kind of the main instrument, and it's just interesting sounding, and I've always really liked it. So, Washington Bullets.
Mama, mama, look there. Your children are playing in the street again. Don't you know what happened down there? A youth of 14 got shot down there. The cocaine guns jammed downtown. The killing clowns, the blood money men. Shooting blows. Washington bullets again. As every cell in Chile will tell the cries of the tortured men. Remember Allende and the days before, before the army came. Remember Victor Jara in the Santiago Stadium. Es verdad, it was Washington bullets again. And in the Bay of Pigs in 1961, Havana for the Playboy in the Cuban sun. For Castro is the color is a redder than red. Those Washington bullets want Castro dead. For Castro is the color.
Washington Bullets.
Yeah, so
I've got
it's so different from the first one that you played, and I think between those two songs, that's pretty much encapsulates the whole sound.
So I have two comments about that song. Number one, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I've never heard that song before.
Yeah,
you know why? I never listened to the Sandinista album. There's 36 songs. It was a triple album, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm
like
sorry, but
hours long.
Yeah, I'm just not going to spend the time.
Right.
And, you know, it's nothing. The main reason is I just wasn't a big enough fan. You know, I liked a lot of, this is where I'm going to kind of head with this. Like, I really liked and still like a lot of their hits,
mm-hmm.
and I've listened to definitely the first album and London Calling. Like, I've listened to those whole albums, but not, like, several times. And so I have, like, the hits that I'm familiar with, and then some slightly deep cuts. And then some of the songs that I like the best are songs that my friends with the punk band in high school used to play.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
nice.
Oh, that's a cool song. So I just knew it from them playing it, you know?
That's
so
cool.
Anyway, yeah. So I'm not going to be like, you know, the Sound Opinion scholar guys on
No,
the
that's
Clash.
Okay. I definitely did not have this album when I was buying the other ones, you know, like late high school and into college and stuff, because it was expensive, you know?
Yeah,
I didn't
triple
have a lot
album.
Of money.
I mean, if a regular album was like $6, this probably was like $15.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so the only reason I had London Calling is because my mom got it for my birthday. Otherwise, that probably would have been too expensive for me to buy too.
That would have been a good one for you to walk through the mall with that record in your bag and feel like you're cool, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, the artwork they had was always cool on their albums.
Right.
It looked punk rock, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you know what? My number five is your number two. So this is where we have to skip down and go to your number five, which is another selection from the Sandinista album.
Okay. This is one of their reggae songs, and they did a lot of them, all the way back to Guns of Brixton, which is kind of a reggae one from their first album. So I knew I wanted to pick one, and this is just kind of my favorite one on Sandinista, so I picked it.
One More Time.
Right. Hey! Oh, just like dynamite. And it's that one will make you feel so right. Unite and stop your killing and you fight.
Hey! I get a witness for all its misery. There's no need to, brother.
I don't know. There aren't many examples of rock bands, or in this case, like a punk band, doing incredible versions of that music. But they just seem completely 100% comfortable doing it. And I think all their reggae songs, and really, if you look at everything except for their combat rock, which doesn't really have any on there, you know, it's like almost 20% of their songs, maybe 15%, which is pretty remarkable. And I just think they're great at it. Great bass player and great drummer.
Yep.
So that's what you need if you're going to play reggae.
Yeah,
have
they
you
definitely
ever tried. Because you're in a cover band and stuff, have you guys ever done reggae and you ever had to try to do the bass in that? Or
very little. There was a Mekon song there was a reggae song, and we might have played a couple other things, but not much. I think I would probably be exposed as a bad reggae bass player.
I don't even know how to talk about the things that characterize that type of playing. I just kind of know it when I hear it, but
yeah.
Is it technically difficult, or do you just have to sort of have a different way of about the music?
My experience is too limited, you know? Okay. It's not like I've tried to play a Bob Marley song or something, so
mm-hmm.
I don't really know. And plus, we sort of have the DIY ethic of, you know, just we're going to play it how we want to play it.
Sure.
So that means I probably would butcher it, but.
Nah, it's okay.
All right. This is Total Rock and Roll. This is one that my friends play, and I always thought it was a great rock and roll song. It's from the Give 'Em Enough Rope album. It's called Tommy Gun.
Oh,
That's rock and roll.
That is rock and roll.
Oh, makes me kind of wish I had ranked it higher. That's really fun. Think about that as a band for a song for a high school punk band to play. It's awesome, right?
Yeah, it is awesome.
Yeah.
And
it's got the cool drum part and the power chords and then that high lead guitar one note thing. It's fun. Yeah. Really
and
fun.
That's not one of their big hits, is it?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So that's a deep cut that you picked there. And as a high school band playing a relatively deep cut from The Clash.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you instant credibility.
Yeah, right those guys are pretty good.
Half the people would think that you wrote the song and would be stunned.
Yeah.
And the other half would, well, maybe whatever the percentages are, the other portion would recognize it and then maybe even appreciate that more.
Right. Like how cool it is they're playing that. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go up to number four, Barrett.
All right. All right. This is one from the first album called Hate and War.
That's Hate and War from the self-titled album, The Clash,
mm-hmm.
from 1977.
Yeah. You know, when we picked this topic and like, okay, I'm going to go through and listen to all the albums straight through and figure out which songs to pick and stuff. I never realized this, but I had the American version of this album, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's different. So I got the songs on here like, Deny, Protex Blues, or Protex Blue, rather, 48 Hours. I think 48 Hours, I can't remember. But I had, like, never heard these songs. Like, what is this? So I looked it up, and, yeah, it was different.
That was true of some albums, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was, a UK artist, and then they would release it maybe at a different time in the United States sometimes. Well, I don't know if there were other reasons, but sometimes there were different versions, and sometimes the song order would be a little different.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can tell the difference, which I've just learned, but it's green and it has them kind of in a photo on the inside. On one version, I think it's the American version. I don't remember which is which, but it says The Clash in kind of like orange. In one version, the album's on the bottom right, and mm-hmm. the other, it's in the top right. So you can identify it that way.
If you were cool.
I had no idea.
If you're really cool, you'd have the import, right?
Yeah, for sure. I did not. I had the... And I'm certainly not saying that I bought the U.S. one when it came out. It was like old by the time I bought it. But yeah. So
cool. All right. Let's go to back to the hits because I play the hits. This one's not really a hit. This is kind of a medium cut, maybe. White Riot, again from the first album. And this one I've got a band comparison. So I think it's kind of easy, but maybe, I don't know. See what you think, who this sounds like. White Riot.
Bang, bang, got a lot of
Well, you're talking about the Ramones, I assume.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like the Ramones.
I never thought of that before, but now I won't be able to think of it any other way.
Right. But that's total rock and roll, right?
Yeah, totally.
I love it.
Especially right in the beginning, you're like, okay, this is a Ramones.
Well, they do the 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. It's like, now what was the, when did the first Ramones album come out? It was before this.
76, right?
Yeah. So they might have been specifically trying to reference the Ramones.
It seems like it.
You know, because to do the 1, 2, 3, 4 there,
right,
like the Ramones used to do all the time, it's probably a thing on purpose. Right. Yeah. Pretty cool, though. All right. Let's see. Where are we at? You're number three.
Okay. This one is from London Calling. And I think it's just a really, I don't know, like everybody gets kind of bummed out, right? And pissed off about things happening and seems like you can't catch a break. And during those times, this would be a good song to pull out, called I'm Not Down.
Yeah, that's a good one. Somebody did a cover of that, and I was, as we were playing that, I was trying to find it, but it must be too obscure, because I know I've heard a cover of that song.
Yeah, I don't recall ever hearing one, but that's a good one to cover.
Yeah, definitely, that's good. From the London Calling album. All right, let's see.
I'll just add that by this point, I mean, okay, so this is their third album. The first two albums were definitely like The Clash, punk band. What is London Calling? Like, then they just started to sound like The Clash and like nothing else.
Yeah.
Incomparable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how they, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that listening to them now, there's still really nobody who sounds like The Clash.
No.
I mean, maybe that sort of ties in with your remark about them doing all these reggae songs and sounding like it's kind of a natural fit. Like, they're not doing reggae songs as like outsiders, like saying, hey, it'd be fun to play this reggae song. They seem sincere about it.
Right.
Like it's everything like they do. That's probably part of their appeal, right? Is that they seem pretty sincere about everything they did.
Sure.
Right?
Like if you go see, you know, whatever, like say you go see a heavy metal band, and they're like, okay, we're going to play the hard ones. Now we're going to play the soft ones.
Yeah.
And we have, that's our range. And they, it's not, you know, but in this case, their range was just like, kind of, I don't know, whatever they became, just like rock songs, bordering on punk songs and reggae songs, and then also, you know, like some jazzy stuff and funky ones, and just all over the place.
I just want to make sure you're not suggesting that the 38th Special wasn't sincere when they did Hold On Loosely.
No,
I think that was straight from the heart, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. The same way that they're very comfortable in that genre, you know, so they can they can mix it up. They can play. All of a sudden, I can't think of any other 38 Special songs.
Caught Up in You.
Caught Up in You. Caught Up in You. That's when that one's a little bit more of a rocker.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah.
All right.
Did they play that when we saw them?
Oh yeah.
I was kidding. Of course they didn't play. I went and saw, you know, Head East. Oh, really? Did they play? What is that?
Never East Been Any Reason.
As a matter of fact, they did.
Yeah.
How did you know? Were you there?
They could. Like, they could not play it just to leave the crowd wanting more.
Right.
Everybody be walking out like, wow, fuck, man.
Yeah.
Why did
exactly
they play that? Come
on. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to hear like a complete lack of creativity on my part?
Yeah. Sure.
I think we should just play the first song on the first album because it kicked ass.
Yeah, Janie Jones.
Yeah, it just rocks.
It's in love with rock and roll, whoa. It's in love with getting some, whoa. It's in love with Janie Jones, whoa. We don't like it, but it's out. It's in love with rock and roll, whoa. It's in love with getting some, whoa. It's in love with Janie Jones, whoa.
That's just totally rocking.
Yeah, you just like first song, first album, and yeah.
Jumping
right out of the gate. One of the things I think that makes The Clash unique is their backing vocals.
Yeah, definitely. And like the team vocals, like they don't really try to do harmonies. They just sing the same thing
in
unison, which is a cool thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing I like about that song is it just has that single guitar chord. It's like, here's a cool chord. You know, it's just like, right? And it's just the simplicity of it is just great. All right. Barrett, number two. And this is one I had on my list also. It's, a little bit of a poppy one, but undeniably cool.
Police on My Back.
Yeah.
Anybody that's as old as we are remembers Eddie Grant. Remember Electric Avenue?
Yeah.
He wrote this song.
Yeah, that's cool. I think
that
I remember
really
that
cool.
Very vaguely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his version probably didn't sound the same as the Clash's version.
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, I don't know if I have either.
Anyway, it's Police on My Back. This is a song that Wilson, when he was real young, latched onto because of the way the guitar in the beginning sounds like a police siren.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just thrilling throughout. And I think one of my favorite parts is, and pretty much any song that like goes through the days of the week is
fun
because you're just like, I can sing this Monday, dude, because you know
Right.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Police on My Back.
Yeah, it's a really fun one.
Yeah.
My hack old guy cover band has played this, and it's really fun. It's a fun bass line to play.
It's
fun because it's like, I always like to say this, bang for your buck, right? Mm-hmm. It's not hard to play, but like you get the bang for your buck because it's super fun.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I can't totally relate. I've never been in a band.
The best combination is cool but easy. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. That's what you strive for.
Totally. So do the other members like come up to the microphone and sing too? Like, do you get up there and do some singing?
I don't. Everybody else does. I'm the guy who doesn't have to because it's just not good.
I'm
just not a singer.
So like in the beginning, you'd be up there singing and they'd be like, well, why don't you like maybe just not do that anymore?
They haven't done that. They tried to get me to do some, actually.
Were you shy?
They put a microphone in front of me and I tried to do some backing vocals a couple times. It just didn't materialize for me.
I think it's because you were just nervous.
That's probably part of it. But sometimes I'll just like yell stuff out and I'm not in front of a mic, right? So it just sounds like background, some guy yelling. That's
fun. Oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Then it's like, that's like the ultimate backing vocal, right? It's like way in the back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They always talk about the bass guy being standing in the back, so that's kind of my thing,
mm-hmm.
right? All right, well, we should keep on rocking here, and let's see. We can't end on my number one, so I got to give my number one. So this is kind of lame, but I think London Calling is a really great song, and it's probably one of their best-known songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably also, do you think this has been maybe played on the radio more than any of the other songs in the U.S.? Maybe
no.
Like Should I Stay or Should I Go was maybe more popular in Train
Rock
in
the Casbah.
Oh, right, and Train in Vain, too, right?
That was probably London Calling and Train in Vain are pretty close.
Yeah. So it's another one where I think if I listened to the radio a lot, this would be just completely forget it because it would be oversaturated and then it would make me hate it. But I haven't really heard it that much, and I just every time I hear it, I think this is a really good song. And it's a kind of like you were saying, this album, it just sounds like The Clash, and you know, London Calling just sounds like The Clash.
Totally.
So we'll play
of the album cover, which is unbelievable.
You picture the cover when you hear the song, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah. The perfect cover.
Yep, that's London Calling.
Yeah, it's like a unassailable classic.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think so.
Like, you know, in 1,000 years, people will still be listening to that on the radio.
That's a little hard to comprehend. In the year 3,017.
Yeah.
I somehow think, I mean, it's not too sadistic, is it, to just say that you don't think that the human race will be around in 1,000 years?
I don't know.
1,000 years is a long time.
It's a long time to live with
in
this world that we've lived in the past 70 years. But it'd be a shame because do you ever think, like, what if the world was around for 5,000 years, right? People 5,000 years in the future could go back and watch high-definition video of, like, how we acted and what TV shows we were watching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And listen to the way we spoke, which would be totally, I would imagine, very different.
Yeah.
And isn't that crazy?
Like, yeah, what if you could? Yeah.
What if you could go back and watch high def video of, like, you know, the Egyptians?
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
Or even, even like the Greeks.
How to video on how to build the pyramids.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Right?
Right.
It'd be pretty good. It'd be a guy talking in like a announcer style voice.
Yeah.
On how you put together the, you know,
right, thing. Exactly.
That'd be pretty cool. They should have done that. I guess
they didn't have the technology. Yeah, that was the problem.
Yeah.
That was my whole point there.
Right. But, yeah. All right. Number one, Barrett. Again, you come through with the deep cut.
Yeah, Spanish Bombs from London Calling. Could have been my, you know, any one of my top few could have been my number one, but that's one I picked when I did it.
Inside in the days of 39. Oh, please leave the Vendana open. Frederico lovers, dead and gone. Bullet holes in the cemetery wall. The black car of the Johnny of the beer. Spanish bombs on the Costa Rica. I'm dying here on the DC 10 tonight. Spanish bombs, you have to get on infinito. Just the quella, oh my god, I thought. Infinito, just the quella, oh my god, it's all Spanish weeks in my disco casino. The freedom fighters died up on the hill. They sang the red flag, they wore the black one. After they died, it was Mockingbird Hill. Back from the buses, went up in flashes. The Irish too, drenched in blood. Spanish bombs shattered the hotels. I sing you either those just missed in the bar. Bonito, just the quera, oh my corazón. Spanish bombs, just the quera, infinito, just the quera, oh my corazón.
Yeah, nothing not to like about
that's
that.
A great one.
Yep.
That's a perfect example. We were talking about the backing vocals where, like, Joe Strummer is singing and then Mick Jones will come in and sing his part. And, like, it gets unpredictable. Like, one of them can start singing one sentence and the other one finishes it, but not in just, like, a sing-songy way where it's like, you do the first two measures, I do the last one. It's like, sometimes they're both singing.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, if that was, like, you know, like, strictly planned out, or if they just kind of winged it in the studio. I don't know. I suppose they had it all planned out.
Maybe.
Or but maybe it sounds spontaneous, and like they're just sort of together doing it.
Right. Yeah. It's cool. All right. That's the definitive review of The Clash. I mean, there have been people probably who have written big, long books, and they're Clash historians, and they've gone through everything. But I think at this point now, the definitive is this podcast.
Right. We've rendered all those things completely obsolete.
People will just say, just go back and listen to this Will's Band of the Week podcast.
Right, then you'll get it.
We definitely did the definitive REM, didn't we?
For sure.
The top, our ranking of the REM albums.
For sure.
That's like definitively, that's the final statement on REM.
The argument settler.
Right.
And I was like, what's the best REM album? Is it Automatic for the People? And then somebody would be like, are you kidding? Listen to what these guys say.
Listen to what we say, and then it's like,
oh,
end of discussion.
It's like somewhere in the middle. Yeah, end of discussion.
Yeah.
The argument settler. But in this case, you know, none of us picked, neither of us picked a song from, of course, Cut the Crap, that album that he did after, I think Topper Heaton quit, or he was fired, I think. And then Mick Jones got fired. And Mick Jones was writing all the songs.
Yeah, you can't fire that guy.
And
it's just a Joe Strummer band then.
The worst reputation, like unbelievable. I've never, ever listened to it. I was going to listen to it for this podcast, but I got this streak going of like however many years it's been since that's released. I guess it's 30 years on. I've never listened to it. kind of a good thing to keep intact.
So you're kind of thinking that you're seeing how long you can hold out without listening to it.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen to it.
Just maybe you'll just
I'll probably
never.
Listen to it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we also didn't pick anything from Combat Rock. And that's not to say that, well, I'll speak for myself, that I don't like it. Because I do like it.
Yeah, I've probably barely listened to it. Again, being not just a, not a complete Clash scholar. I'm not a Clash completist.
Yeah.
So
that's okay. But I mean, of course, we mentioned the two hit songs, which is Should I Stay or Should I Go? Which is like, isn't that like a Trivago ad now?
It sounds like it could be. Yeah.
Like it's, a, you know.
The thing
the question is, should I stay or should I go to like my high school reunion or whatever?
Yeah,
it's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, those songs, those three that we mentioned, Should I Stay or Should I Go, Rock the Casbah, and what's the other one?
From this album?
The other one that's like the big hit that we didn't pick.
Train in Vain?
Yeah. Okay. So those, you know, I think they don't really represent the Clash that well. But none of them are songs that I really dislike. I mean, I think they're still like pretty listenable.
For sure.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been to, I can't remember what the show was, but before, you know how they play like the house music and you imagine the band picked it out and they played Combat Rock and, you know, you're in a rock club and it's dark and everybody in there is having some beers and everybody in there is like cooler than you are. And then you have the music playing and I was like, this is really good. I really like it. It's just, you know, there's a tendency, I think, to kind of push it aside because that was their big one that, like, even, you know, like every one of your cousins and, you know, knows that song and everybody you went to high school with knows that song. So you're like, must not be that good if they all like it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is good.
Yeah. So, well, you already indicated you had the ultimate cred by seeing the Sex Pistols live. Did you ever see The Clash live?
No.
The closest I came was I saw Mick Jones's band, Big Audio Dynamite.
That's cool.
Yeah, because they opened up for U2 in a stadium.
Wow.
You know, and just U2 in a stadium. There's limited value in that, but it was back in like probably like 1992 or something.
Yeah.
So it was it was all right.
Like on the,
it was all right. That was Mick Jones, right?
On the Zuropa tour?
God, I can't remember. Yeah. But that was Mick Jones' band, right? Big Audio Dynamite. Yeah. And so, you know, it was okay, but it was kind of cool, like seeing that I was seeing a guy from The Clash. So that was
totally
cool. Yeah.
And a bit something like that stuff sounds pretty cool live.
I remember it being all right. It was pretty decent as far as opening bands in a giant stadium. Yeah. All right. I think we should sign off. We've given them their $0 for sure.
Craig alone gave them zero.
We were already at zero before we even started this whole thing. So,
yeah.
So we're at like, it's just like, you can't even put a number on this.
Or maybe Craig dug a deep hole.
And then
we had to have an amazing one to get it up to zero.
Right. Well, either way you look at it, it's above zero now.
Yeah. I'm not really comfortable. Like, I can give Nicholas and Chris a lot of crap and, you know, don't mean any of it. But I don't feel right doing it for Craig. Certainly not David Zuger.
No, we can't insult him yet.
And Anurag is just like such a kind person. He can't tease that guy.
He's too nice.
What would you say?
He's too nice to insult.
Right. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll work on that, though, because we should be able to get to the point where we can insult everybody.
Yeah.
Right? That's a goal we have. Mm-hmm. All right. Talk to you again next week. I think we will, with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.